I have nothing Halloween on right now.
You have a black shirt, which could
two,
be, you know.
I have two children in costume.
Yeah.
So they are my... They are my costumes.
My two kids are trick-or-treating in separate places tonight for the first time, officially different places.
Wow.
They're getting really old. A lot happens in a week.
Oy.
Right?
I feel like I shouldn't say oi right now.
You can say oi.
I know, but it's extra like...
No, it's not. Oh. I don't feel that way. It's interesting. We should talk about that. Do we need to introduce the show? Probably we should have done it before.
Yeah. I mean, you know where you are. You know what you're listening to. It's Mouthy, Messy, Mandatory. You know that I'm Katie.
And you know that I'm Ronit. In a higher.
Love it.
So it's interesting to me that we're talking about Temple to Hirsch in Seattle again this week, because last week our episode was about seeing the Soloway siblings as well as
Hannah Gadsby.
At De Hirsch doing their Seattle Arts and Lecture book tour thing. And we were there and, you know, in this giant room at De Hirsch, and Temple De Hirsch once again is in my news cycle and on my radar this week because they hosted a vigil there on Tuesday night of this week after the shooting. No, Monday night, excuse me. And I guess several thousand people attended, interfaith communities. And it was to show support and solidarity for the attack on the Tree of Life Synagogue and the deaths that that were the result of the gunman.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, not in a good way, but it's kind of strange when you actually think about what all that can happen in a week or a day.
One of the first things that I thought about when I'd heard about the synagogue shooting was I immediately thought about you because I know that you're involved in your, you know, temple community. Mm-hmm. And, I felt this really, really strong, like, urge to reach out to you and see like how you were doing. And I did, I texted you, but I wasn't like, how are you doing?
Hey, girl. How are you? And I was like, good. I'm teaching today at the temple, but I didn't realize until later you meant how am I doing with the capital D. And I played that over in my head a little bit because I realized maybe I should have elaborated on my response, but I thought, well, I am at the temple. So just a little backstory. I teach at a Reform temple, a Reform synagogue, the religious school. I teach Hebrew. I have taught seventh graders about World War I and World War II and Holocaust history. I have taught ninth graders on personal narratives and giving back to their communities and the world. And I'm currently just teaching third grade, which is one of my favorite years to teach as well as to be in. I love third grade. And only one of my helpers in the class and two of my students were absent on Sunday, but the rest of my kids were there. And something I mentioned on our podcast last year when we were newer is that I used to teach in World War I and World War II history and the Holocaust history of seventh grade. I used to teach before we had this current administration. This was in 2015. I would cover the history. I knew a little bit about it because my father was a big World War II, you know, self-made historian. I would talk about Nazism and I would talk about anti-Semitism and Kristallnacht and all of the events leading up to the Final Solution. And it seemed far away. Now, growing up, I was taught that these kinds of things can happen again. But for me, these kinds of things like the Holocaust and, you know, blatant anti-Semitism were black and white photos and they were black and white footage and they were old, old, old stories that had nothing to do with my current life or my current country. And that's how I felt when I taught my Holocaust class safely in this cradle of a Hebrew school, a religious school, looking back in time in a current climate where Obama was president. And we were, you know, thinking about Jewishness in the past. Cut to now, if I was teaching the seventh graders now, I would be a little more concerned about how to answer all the questions that they would have for me. Even last year, it felt to me not as far out of reach in terms of where we were as a nation or as a world. And now, as of today, the date of this recording, it feels even less out of reach because those events, I mean, I do think the interesting thing, side note about history, is you always learn growing up that, you know, we need to learn about history because we need to learn from the past because events get repeated and we must learn from our actions and see how things unfolded. And it never felt real to me or necessary. I thought, blah, 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 this is a way to teach people history and get them to stay in their seat. But now I see it more and more because the older you get, I'm like older than I've ever been, obviously. And I see even more how quickly time goes and how 40 years, 60 years is not that long ago. So teaching the Holocaust and teaching the events that led up to the Final Solution and the concentration camps for my fellow teachers at this religious school must be a little more difficult and a little bit more fraught with, you know, confusing questions and confusing answers for the teachers to these seventh grade students. And, you know, to hear that several thousand people from Seattle interfaith communities showed up to support the Pittsburgh synagogue and to support the Jews in our community was really good to hear. And this soundbite from our local NPR station, KUOW, they interviewed some people after the vigil. And speaking here is Lou Rochelle Brim Atkins.
The three of us are members of First AME Church, which is just across the street. And when our parishioners were killed in North Carolina, people from the Jewish and Muslim and Catholic and whatever religious communities came and supported us. So we just wanted to come and be sure that we supported people in their grief because we know what that feels like.
So she's talking about the, you know, Dylann Roof shooting years ago, a couple of years ago, and how the Jewish community came out for her and the other communities, other faith communities came out for them to support them. And so I live in Seattle. I'm not from Pittsburgh. I'm from New York. But this made me feel good to hear her coming out, to hear several thousand people came to her. Not everyone was Jewish, obviously. Like, it does make a difference to know that people have your back.
Of course.
People are listening. And do you know what's so strange? I was surprised on Monday. I actually was surprised, and I can't really account for this feeling, when the news was covering the death of 11 congregants at the synagogue. Like, yeah. I somehow didn't register that this too would make news. I don't know why.
I think it speaks to the culture of gun violence that we have, where, I mean, there was a school shooting where two students were shot in their hallway in, I believe, North Carolina. And I saw one tweet about it. It did not even trend. Mm. This is a school shooting that is now not newsworthy. And granted, this was a particularly awful news cycle with so much violence between the shooting in the synagogue in Pittsburgh and the shooting in the Kroger in Kentucky, where the man tried to enter a black church and couldn't get in. So he went to a grocery store nearby to kill people, and particularly, specifically, verbally, he specified black people, and he would not kill white people because he was white. I mean, the level of violence is so high that it does feel like, wow, this is a big story. That to ask us to pause and say, like, wow, 11 people, that's a lot of people. That's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people, and you're right about the desensitizing of our, I mean, of most of us. That doesn't mean that we're not affected by what we hear, but it's who's going to get the news? You know, who's going to get the attention? The most deaths, the most gory. Yeah. What caught my attention, and I was so happy to see this, was that Wasi Muhammad, who's the executive director of the Pittsburgh Islamic Center, came to speak at a vigil, and this is what he said.
We're not going to stop. We don't think our work is finished because that's a high number. We just want to know what you need. You know, if it's more money, let us know. If it's people outside your next service, you know, protecting you, let us know. We'll be there. If you need organizers on the ground, Engage will provide them. If you need anything at all, if you need food for the families, if you just need somebody to come to the grocery store because you don't feel safe in this city, we'll be there. And I'm sure everybody in the room would say the same thing. We're here for the community.
So More than $150,000 has been raised by these two charities. And in addition to that, CBS News reported there was a GoFundMe campaign that is supporting Tree of Life, and it raised, this is the news I have from CBS News, $742,000 for more than 12,000 donors as of this past Monday evening. And it was launched by Shay Kateri, an Iranian immigrant living in Washington, D.C. And that's how much they raised for the people who are mourning at the Tree of Life. So I felt in a really bad cycle of news, it might sound cliched, but the fact that people can come together, the fact that people who are not Jewish are coming to get the backs of Jews who need the support right now made me so happy.
Yeah.
Because you know that the Tree of Life, some of their congregants were very active in helping refugees, whether they were Muslim or Christian or whatever they were. And so that's part of the reason they were targeted by the gunmen.
One of the things that I keep hearing people saying is like, choose to act in love, choose love over fear and anger. And I've been really struggling with what that actually looks like. And I do feel like taking the time to show up for people who are in pain, to say like, hey, I'm with you. And if you can't go to a place like that, taking the time to contribute to one of these campaigns to say like, we support you, we're here, you're not alone. You deserve to be respected and welcome and feel safe in your sanctuary, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that's a really, really powerful way to choose love. And I think it's also, there was a great article in The Atlantic that just came out that the journalist actually went to the Pittsburgh morgue and sat and observed the people in the Jewish community sitting to guard the victims before they were buried. And the article is really beautiful and very, very moving.
Yeah, I read it too. And it is about, you know, they're not allowed to sit next to the bodies, but they're in a room off of that. And people have signed up to take every single hour to guard the nefesh, which is the soul of the deceased.
When I thought about that and hearing you say like how meaningful and impactful it was to you to have just people gathering to be together, it reminded me of that ritual and that tradition of just staying together, you know, just staying together for, I'm like going to cry right now. But just staying together and saying, you know, like you're not alone. I'm still with you, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's really important. I think it's really important because I think sometimes of those superhero movies about, you know, you have to fight darkness with light or, you know, I mean, gosh, even Lord of the Rings, so many of the things we read and we watch have this theme of you have to band together and not give into your darker side. You have to follow the light and support the light and more light will happen. And
Luke Skywalker.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like it's a very predictable thing for me to say or for me to like, but I mean, there's basic things I can do to help the synagogue right now or to help my fellow Jews and to help our country. But one of the main things that we can do is stand together with anyone who's being victimized. And that's what I'm so proud about, you know, like being part of this podcast and to talk about whether the people are trans, whether the people are Jewish or Muslim, whether they're women who've been assaulted, whether they're kids who've been abused, whoever's been, you know, hurt. I feel like it's important to stand together to help them.
Yes.
So.
All right. All right. Yeah. Okay. Dance break.
Dance break.
All right. Hard left.
Mm-hmm. Hard left.
Hard left.
I can do it.
But it's not. Is it really a hard left? Because we're about to do a segment that is all about like the power of love.
Yep, exactly.
So you know what? It's not a hard left. We're just merging into the left lane and kicking into
and
a different gear.
And maybe playing a little Huey Lewis in the news.
Potentially.
For the power of love.
Oh my God. That was a deep pull.
I mean, that would definitely warm us up a little bit.
You know, every time I hear the power of love, I want to ride a skateboard holding onto the bumper of a car because that's just imprinted in my psyche. Okay, so I have some really, really good news for everybody, and that is that moms are coming to save the world. We're coming, we're on the way. Quick note here. Katie and Ronit are aware that not everybody has an excellent relationship with their mother. Mother-child relationships are complicated, and while some people feel comforted, loved, affirmed, and accepted when they think about their mothers, other people feel stressed, anxious, nauseated, angry, or sad when they think about their mothers. So for the sake of brevity, Katie and Ronit are using the term mom to describe any person who has your best interests at heart and loves you unconditionally. Nice. And if your mom doesn't fall into that category, please know that shit is not your fault. And whenever we say that word, please imagine a person who does love you unconditionally and has your best interests at heart, or alternatively, a chocolate-eyed yellow lab named Mom, who's fresh from the groomers. Okay, perfect. So it's really, really easy to feel a lot of despair around the news cycle right now. And, you know, what we just talked about of choosing love over fear, it feels like a really, really hard thing to do because at the end of the day, choosing love is choosing fear. Because if I choose to stand next to my neighbor, I am fearful of what's going to happen to my neighbor potentially. And if I'm choosing to love my kids, I get afraid that something bad is going to happen to my kids. And if I choose to love America, I'm afraid of what fucked up thing America is going to do next to people that I care about. And so choosing love really is choosing fear. It's like, you know, choose jalapenos, not heartburn. Well, you're getting both, you know?
Oh.
And so for me, like the more I thought about it, the more I was like, okay, I think what they're saying, or the way I need to hear this, is choose love and don't be afraid that your love isn't going to be strong enough. Like, choose love fearlessly and believe that your love is powerful, which makes a lot more sense for me intellectually. But then I was like, how do I actually do that? And then a light bulb went off and I was like, oh, I know how to do that. I'm a fucking mom. I know how to love instinctively. I know how to love people who are driving me crazy. Even though there are so many people in the news cycle right now who are selfish, jerk face bullies. Guess what? I know how to love selfish people because babies are selfish as fuck. I know how to love people who are acting like jerk faces because I had 2 teenagers. At different points in my lives. And I know how to love people who are bullying other people because that is a thing all children do sometimes. So this, I was like, oh shit, this is within my grasp. And then the more I thought about it, the more I was like, what if we just approached all of these problems around us with the vibe of like, I'm your mom, but I'm like the best possible mom on earth. And let's just mom the shit out of this. Okay. Let's like mom the shit out of these problems. Right.
So there's this article in The Guardian, you know, I do read The Guardian, by Saima Mir, and it's just an opinion piece. If the men of tomorrow are to respect women, parents have to teach it. So there's a couple of things. She's a mother of boys just like you. And you,
you're a mother of a boy.
I'm a mother of a boy.
Yeah. I am mother of boy
and girl, but you're the mother of boys. And so is she. And she says that, just to bring it down here for a second, and I'm going to bring us back up in a second. She says that she's acutely aware that it's not just women who are affected by patriarchy. The high rate of suicide among young men points to a huge problem within society, rooted in our need to tell boys to man up and hide their vulnerability. So, and yes, granted, she says, granted that our political system and all of our kind of areas of enforcement, judiciary and our boardrooms are mostly male, you know, populated. They're male dominated still. But if change is going to come, it has to be with men as our comrades and not as our enemies. And so what she's saying is that in order to create more comrades, we have to raise our boys. This is what we can do right now, how powerful we are. Raise our boys to learn how to be good feminists and how to be good peers for women. So she said that her worry is that if she doesn't teach her sons to respect women, they could get swept up by the tide of pride and arrogance of patriarchy.
Oh my gosh.
A tide that tells them that they are masters of the universe and they can do whatever they want and get away with it. And so she says that it will also steal healthy relationships from them and make it difficult to love their spouses in a way that makes their relationships good. So she's suggesting that we allow our sons to express their emotions and teach them that feelings are stereotyped as feminine are not lesser emotions, that you support your boys when they cry and, you know, let them know that being vulnerable is good and that empathy is good and that we support that. And that maybe if we do this, the boys that we raise can become the men of tomorrow and they won't need to control women. Right.
Yes.
So she's saying what we're about to say, which is that we're not powerless. This is an exact quote. "We are extraordinarily powerful. As we give birth to and raise the next generation, we can captain the ships and navigate the seas that will set our sons and daughters on a safer path in this."
I am nodding so hard. I practically knocked myself unconscious on the microphone right now. I was like, boom, 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 like huge nods through everything you just said.
Yeah.
I completely agree with you. And that's something that my husband and I had to have a conversation about, like, very early on in our parenting, which is, how are we going to protect the emotional lives of our sons? Because the reality is that even in, like, this super progressive hippie community of Seattle, right, allegedly, I have heard young dads in my demographic say to their sons, "Boys don't cry." I have heard it, and I was like, oh my God, of course they do. Of course they cry. Everybody cry. It's fine. It's fine to cry. So I think, as moms, like, literally in our own families, as we're parenting our children, we're super powerful and able to make choices about, like, how we're going to guide our children, what we're going to expose them to, what conversations we're going to have, and what, like, values we're going to have. But I also want to take this to, like, the next level, which is to say, like, what if we approached social cultural issues as a group, as if we were parenting them instead of fighting them? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, what if we looked at Donald Trump calling Stormy Daniels horse face, and instead of, like, imploding about it, coming to it like a parent, like, "Are you okay?" Not to, you know, Donald Trump necessarily, but, like, usually when you call names, that means that you're upset about something or worried. Do you need a couple minutes to calm down before we can have a conversation about this?
So great.
Should we go take a walk? But, you know, even if you're not ready to talk, it's not okay to call names. So I need you to hand me your phone, and you don't get to use Twitter for a little while, Jack. Like, that's what parenting Twitter looks like. It's like, when people are abusive on Twitter, you take away the Twitter. When my kid's hitting his brother with a stick, we take away the stick. It's, you know, like,
I know, but
it's common sense.
Yes. It doesn't run like that. That's how it should run.
But that's like, let's live in the dream
let's
world.
Let's do it.
Let's let go of what it is.
I wish, what I it just could wish, be. I just wish we could do that to him. I mean, I think it would be so funny. Like, has anyone even tried to psychoanalyze him ever?
Donald Trump?
Yeah.
Oh my God. A million people.
No, but
people.
In person, to his face.
I don't know. I doubt it.
You know what I mean?
I doubt it.
Yeah.
God, that would be so annoying. I bet all the therapists are like, flipping coins to see who doesn't get to treat him. You know what I mean? Like, he's the worst. Anyway, that was not a very parent loving thing to say. Okay. So I have a couple of other kind of like
for them.
Meta type examples. Okay. So, like, you know, the way that, if you walk into, your playroom, if you have young kids like me and your kids are fighting over, like, the fresh new can of Play-Doh, you don't, like, leave your family, right? You don't just walk away from that. You, like, push up your sleeves and you get in with the Play-Doh and you figure out a solution. And sometimes that looks like pulling the new Play-Doh in half and giving each kid a ball of Play-Doh. And sometimes that looks like taking turns with the new ball of Play-Doh. And sometimes that looks like everyone gets a timeout and we take away the Play-Doh for a little while, right? Like, we can have those kinds of conversations as voters with our elected representatives. It's like, sometimes you reach a compromise. Sometimes one person gives something up and waits for their turn. And sometimes you vote that motherfucker out of office and he goes to time out and he doesn't get the Play-Doh anymore, which is, in this metaphor, the elected power.
Yeah.
But, like, if we can, like, institute these really legitimate common sense consequences, which you are totally empowered to do as a mom and you're totally empowered to do as a voter.
Yes.
Like, you're in control of the culture of your family as a mom. You're in control of the culture of your country as a voter. You can do it. And so if you choose not to, maybe you're raising some kids that you, like, wish that you could help more. Maybe you're raising some kids that you're like, gosh, my kid is having a really hard time sharing. You might have to fucking roll up your sleeves and get in there. You're like, gosh, my congressman is really having a hard time voting for women's reproductive rights. Roll up your sleeves and get in there, man. Like, you're in control.
Totally right.
Rock it. Okay, so that's one. The other thing, as a mom, think about your day as a pie chart.
Mm-hmm.
For what percentage of your day, how big is that slice of pie when you're doing one thing at a time?
I have older kids than you. They're both in school.
You're like, prepping me.
I just want you to know that this might You might like get a little. I do get a chance to do just one thing sometimes. I do get to sit down and work on my writing or, awesome. You know, work on my book, or I get to go exercise for a little while and just do that. Now, I might be thinking a million thoughts while I exercise, but yeah.
Totally. Yeah.
So I would say, like, on my pie chart, are you talking just like a 12-hour day?
Yeah.
I would say probably 2 of those hours I get to focus on just one thing.
Like just one thing at a time. That's like... Okay, that's pretty, so you prepped me for like your whole pie being just one thing at a time. So like 2 slices of a 12-hour day, that's still 10 slices of that day where you're doing multiple things at the same time. Like, as engaged citizens of the United States, can we just let go of the idea that everything is an either or? Like, oh, we can't talk about... you know, treating sex workers with dignity because we have this situation at the border. You know, actually, we can do both. It's like telling a mom, oh, you can't pack your kid's lunch. He doesn't have his shoes on yet. Well, you're going to do both. I can do both. In fact, I can do both with the same 2 hands in the same 3 minutes, right? Like, we're all masters of multitasking.
Yes.
Made that way because there are lots of things we love, moving through space in many different directions.
Right. You can hold on to several ideas and concepts and loves and feelings at the same time.
Totally. Like, I don't know any moms who are like, I just really have to do one thing at a time. Like, that is not a sustainable way to live.
And also, you don't get
to. Yeah, no, there's that dream has died. That dream died. If that was even a reality for you beforehand, it's not there anymore. As soon as you have this child in your life, no matter how old the child is, like, there are things you have to do for your kids. When you and I talk to each other during the week when we're not podcasting, it's always like, oh, I'm going to drop off so-and-so at this activity, and then I have to run over here to run an errand for my spouse, and then I have to go pick up the other one over here, and then I'm gonna go to the exercise class, and then I have to pick up a thing for dinner, and then I gotta call my grandma to check in, and then I gotta do all the, you know, it's just the every day is busy and full of things that are not necessarily connected to each other, but all matter to you. So you don't have to apologize for caring about something, and you don't have to apologize for making space to talk about it. And you don't have to apologize for asking for people's respect when you do talk about it. Don't let people try to bully you with like their more immediate threat. You can talk about the things you care about and also talk about the things they care about, because we're fucking moms. We juggle 49,000 things at the same time, and they're all different shapes and sizes and weights, and some of them are like live fish that you're juggling, and some of them are feathers and bowling balls and frying pans, and you know, okay, I got a whole metaphor for that.
I liked it.
Anyway, okay, moms are also really, really good strategic thinkers. When we come, like, so for example, my 4-year-old, whom I'll call Buster for this conversation, my 4-year-old is in a butt phase. Everything is butt. It's butts, butts, butts. He's talking about butts constantly. And he will like this morning for breakfast, he was like, Mom, can I have some Honey Nut butts for breakfast? And I'm like, okay, good one, honey. I haven't heard that 7,000 times over the last 3 days. But so in my head, I'm like, well, I don't want him to say butts all the time. What are the chances this is just a phase? What are the chances me making a big power struggle over his use of the word butt is going to actually elongate that phase and make it more fun and interesting for him to engage in? And like, what are the chances that someone is going to be legitimately hurt by this behavior? Mm-hmm. Like, if he goes to school and he says butts, is that going to hurt somebody? Probably not. And not in a way that like the teacher can't be like, hey, we're not going to say butts at school. And it's like, yeah, you should probably listen to your teacher. You know, like, but if it comes from a teacher, it's different from coming from mom. Because if I say don't say butts, he's in the room right now, so I have to say this kind of quietly. If I say don't say butts, he will never say another word but butts. His like college graduation valedictorian speech, because he's going to be valedictorian.
Of course.
Even though he only says the word butts. Is just going to be like, butts, 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 butts. You know, like, it's ridiculous. So I have to let it go and wait, because I don't believe it's going to harm anybody, and I think it's just going to play itself out.
So this would be like...
Stormy Daniels' horse face. Like, those kinds of stories that are like, does this actually hurt somebody? Does, like, I mean, name calling hurts people. And I would not be okay with my kids name calling somebody horse face. But like, so if Buster were in a phase where he was calling people butt face, that would be a completely different story. That would be a different like mathematical calculation that I made in my head, where it's like, if this is going to hurt somebody, I'm saddling up. I'm dying on this hill. It's not acceptable. There are going to be real consequences. But I don't put forth that same amount of energy with every single thing that he does that I don't want him to do forever.
Right, because it won't be as impactful.
It won't be as impactful. And it's also just like, I will be exhausted, you know? Like, I have to pick my battles. And not I, like, I'm not special. I think all parents have this understanding that, like, okay, some things I'm going to have to endure until they're over. But if it's hurting somebody, that's unacceptable. And we need to get on that train and like go for it. You know what I mean? This is just like generally about like the way moms love, which is kind of Gordon Ramsay style.
Like, oh, wait, you have a crush on him, right?
I do.
Yeah.
I
do you know I've never seen him on TV or like in like never seen him, never heard him.
Okay. So the way that he is like he takes no shit. But he's also 100% on your team. Like, if you fuck up in front of him, he's going to be like, well, you fucked up, didn't you? And then when you do well, he's going to be like, well done. Handshake. Nice work.
He doesn't, like, become James Corden or something.
No. He's not, like, bring it in for a hug. But, no, I mean, like, he doesn't reject people. He rejects behaviors.
Gotcha.
And I think that's how moms operate, too. And I think that's in general as like a society and culture, how we have to start operating as well, where it's really, really easy to reject entire people. And there are some entire people that I am still 100% fine with rejecting.
Yeah.
The president of the United States of America. But I think in general, like when you're talking to people and they do something that's not okay, it's okay to say that's not okay. And that's not the same thing as saying you're not okay. You know, like if I'm talking to Buster and he hits his brother or pushes him, I'm not going to be like, you monster, you pushed your brother, you're dead to me. Like, no, as a parent, I understand that I have a relationship with this person forever, no matter what. And the best way for me to teach that kid that that's not okay is to explain it and like calmly love the child and say, hey, pushing isn't okay. I love you too much to let you become a kid who pushes.
And this would be like...
This, to me, is like how we should be engaging with, oh, I don't know, our media. Like our media... I love you, media. I love you. But stop reprinting lies without fact-checking them in the headline. That infuriates me when you see like Washington Post headlines or New York Times headlines or, you know, wherever you're getting your news. And it's like, caravan full of ISIS, Trump says. Like, no, it should say Trump wrongly claims caravan full of ISIS. Trump incorrectly states caravan full of ISIS. Trump lies about caravans full of ISIS. Like, it's not true. It is incredibly irresponsible for you to do that. But I'm not like, you're dead to me, media. I'm like, media, you need to do better. And until you're doing better, I'm going to help you do better by putting you in your room for a timeout and then explaining to you why what you did is not cool and you're better than that. And we're on the same team. So you got to start doing better. And I'm going to be here to tell you when you're not. Hi, I'm Katie. I write to the New York Times a lot. I'm like, hi, New York Times. It's your mom again.
Do they respond?
No, they don't. It's okay. I mean, you know,
but this
they get
is
a little
like
bit
voting.
Of mail.
This is like voting. Like the more people that speak up and say this is not okay or this is what I want, the more effect it's going to have. So
exactly.
It doesn't mean you should stop writing to them.
And as a parent, you should be used to the fact that you're going to do something with your kid 4,000 times before it actually fucking penetrates their brain and becomes reflected in their actions.
Sometimes maybe until they leave for college.
Yeah. You know how, did you ever do baby sign language with your kids?
Yes, of course.
So how long did you do like baby sign language to your kids before they started doing it back to you?
A while.
Like, you just keep doing it. You're like, do you want food? Do you want food? And you touch
them. And start doing it.
And then, you know, a year later, you ask your kid if he wants food and he touches his mouth and you're like, holy shit, it was working the whole time. Okay, it's quiz time. The quiz is called WWMD. What would mom do?
Nice.
So I'm going to give you some real world problems and you're going to give me a potential mom response.
Okay.
How you would respond to it as if you were the mom of that problem.
Okay. I'm ready.
People keep shooting each other. Mom, what would you do?
I would probably take away their guns.
Right.
I would probably punish them for shooting each other. I would probably make sure people around me didn't have access to those guns.
Ding, 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 ding. It's like not incredibly complicated. It's, I mean, it gets more complicated when you talk about all of the gun legislation options that are out there. But like, if your kid is hurting somebody with something, you take the thing away. If people keep shooting each other, sorry, that toy is getting taken away from you. Okay, problem. Trans people shouldn't get to identify themselves. Gay families shouldn't be able to adopt. Immigrants shouldn't be able to become citizens. Generalized exclusion. What do you say to the problem of exclusion, Mom?
Everyone gets to be included.
Hell yes.
Yeah, include you can't leave anybody out.
No, of course not. When your kids are having friends over and you hear, you know, your son saying to one kid, you can't play with us. Mama's coming in. I'm sorry, what now? No, everybody who is here gets to play. We include all people. Okay, the media continues to repeat Trump's lies without fact-checking him. Mom.
They should fact check.
They should fact check. Yeah. But as a mom, what are we saying? If we're the mom of the New York Times, what are we going to say to New York Times?
Stop printing things until you get it accurate.
Yes. Stop hanging out with that lying kid who makes you lie too. Like, yeah, exactly. You're better than that. Come on. Until you can figure out how to be truthful, you don't get to hang out with that kid anymore. Stop covering the press conferences and rallies. Stop it. Stop it is what I'm saying. All right. That's the what would mom do's. What would mama do?
What would the moms do?
Moms.
Yeah.
And just to tag this out, remember that when we said, what would moms do? What we're talking about is how can we bring unconditional love and a sense of like, we're in this. This isn't, we're not, we're Americans. We're here. We're in it. This is our country.
And it's not just, it's not just unconditional love. It's respect. And it's an idea of the long view. What is the ultimate goal? Is to build a great person, to make a person self-sufficient and be able to function in the world as a good member of the world. So how can we do that?
Yeah.
What do we expect from our lawmakers? Yeah.
Exactly. And push up your sleeves and get in there, Mom. Do 40,000
And you still have time to vote, guys.
Yes. If I find out you didn't vote, I'm going to give you a really big hug.
And tell you to do better.
Shake you. Thanks for listening to Mouthy, Messy, Mandatory. We are a member of the large network of podcasts distributed by the Young Turks. So thanks, team. Thanks for coming together to make a pretty good podcast, I think. I don't know.
Wait, who are you thinking? Am I supposed to thank someone now?
No. Oh. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Thanks, Large.
I think we're doing pretty well. So if you want to talk to us about anything that we said on this podcast or previous podcasts or want to ask us a question, you can find us on social media. We're on Twitter at Mouthy Podcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/mouthymessymandatory. We love to hear from you. Please come join the conversation. And if you have an extra 20 to 22 seconds, depending on how quickly you type, if you can find us on whatever streaming service you use or podcast service, I guess, and just rate us and write a quick review, we really appreciate that. That helps other people find us. All right.
Bye.
Bye. Wear a sweater.